Welcome to Through the Word, leading you on a journey through the entire Bible, one chapter at a time. Today, Peyton Jones guides us through the Old Testament book of Leviticus. Now to Pastor Peyton.
We're in Leviticus chapter 7 today on Through the Word. The chapter continues mapping out the choreography for the priests making the sacrifices, but most of chapter 7 has to do with the priests getting their cut of the food that was offered. After all, they had mouths to feed, and hey, they had to make a living like everyone else. God spells out in chapter 7 exactly what they can take from the sacrifice so that they can survive. You wouldn't find a Levite standing on a street corner with a cardboard sign that said, "We'll work for food," but nonetheless, food is what they work for, and a little bit more, which we'll see in the chapter. The key verse is found in verse 35, summarizing the chapter. "This is the portion of Aaron and his sons from the Lord's food offerings, from the day they were presented to serve as priests for the Lord." Which raises a difficult question. Would you serve the Lord if it meant that you couldn't have what you wanted, but you had all you needed? Often, that's the decision that a missionary has to make. Having served on the field for 12 years myself, I can tell you there's a satisfaction that comes from doing the Lord's work that nothing else comes close to. Jesus told his disciples, "I have food which you know nothing about. My food is to do the will of my Father who sent me." The Apostle Paul was a man who knew what it was to be both hungry and naked in his service to God, and he tells Timothy, "Godliness with contentment is great gain." Nonetheless, God sets it up for the priests that they always have what they need. While they've got God's back serving him, he's got theirs. Chapter 7's broken down specifically in verses 1 through 10 with some instructions for the guilt offering, and the peace offerings covered in verses 11 through 18. Verses 19 through 27 are an aside about what shouldn't be eaten, namely unclean food, fat, and blood. Let's look at what God says about the guilt offering. In verse 7, God says the guilt offering is just like the sin offering. There is one law for them. The priest who makes atonement with it shall have it. And the priest who offers any man's burnt offering shall have it for himself, the skin of the burnt offering that he has offered. And every grain offering baked in the oven and all that is prepared on a pan or a griddle shall belong to the priest who offers it. Sounds pretty fair to me. Not only does he have something to eat, but he also gets to keep the skin of the animal that was sacrificed. Nice. You might remember that in the book of Genesis, after Adam and Eve had sinned and discovered that they were naked, that God took their fig leaves from them and instead clothed them with the skins of a freshly killed animal. That was to symbolize that our own efforts to cover up our own sin are weak and ineffective. But instead, we needed something innocent to cover us. In other words, our guilt needs to be covered with his blood. We need his righteousness. We wear his innocence over our guilt. Moving on to the next verse, verse 10 tells us that the uncooked grain or flour belonged to all of the Levites. That meant that they got provided for even when they were off duty. Now that's important. When I was a firefighter, I didn't just get paid for being on a fire call. I also got paid for being on call. It was called a retainer fee, and God provides that for anyone who's a Levite. Verse 11 begins the second section of the chapter, and this time we're talking about the peace offering. Remember, this was a joyous meal. Verse 12 tells us, "If the peace offering is offered for a thanksgiving, then he shall offer it with thanksgiving sacrifice, unleavened loaves mixed with oil." And verse 14 tells us the priest gets the bread along with the meat. In case you've ever wondered who invented the sandwich, I got it on pretty good authority that God just may have invented it in Leviticus chapter 7. Or at least left enough of a breadcrumb trail for the priest to follow. Basically, here are the ingredients for a sandwich, guys. You figure it out. Because they didn't have refrigerators, the meat of the peace offering had to be eaten within 2 days. In verse 15, God puts a label on the package, "Consume within 2 days after opening." Now, this timetable was important because it couldn't be allowed to rot or decay. And past 2 days in a Mediterranean climate meant that things were going to get a little bit funky. The rule of thumb found in verses 15 to 18 was that you could eat it on the day it was offered. You could even eat it on the next day. But on the third day, it was too late You had to burn it with fire. This is a foreshadowing of Christ, our sacrifice, who was in the tomb for one day, 2 days, and on the third day rose again. In fact, on the day of Pentecost, Peter quotes Psalm 16 that says, "For you will not abandon my soul to Hades or let your Holy One see corruption." And he preached the resurrection of Jesus. This rule pointed to the fact that Jesus, our perfect sacrifice, would be raised up on the third day. The more you study the Old Testament, the more you realize that the old saying is true. The New Testament is in the old contained. The Old Testament is in the new explained. The third section of chapter 7 naturally flows out of this discussion. Verse 19 reads, "Flesh that touches any unclean thing shall not be eaten." To teach people about the concept of holiness, God often drew a sharp distinction between what was clean and what was unclean, and he didn't want them to mix. Therefore, in order to eat the sacrifice and be declared forgiven, you could not be contaminated or unclean by having touched a dead body or somebody's poo-doo. There were other things you shouldn't touch either, but we won't get into that right now. The last section of chapter 7 in verse 28 introduces something that the priest ought to do with the portion that he keeps. It's called the Levitical wave offering, and it's not like the Mexican wave in a stadium. The priest took the breast from the meat and he waved it in the air, recognizing that it came from God. It was a way of giving a nod or a salute to God in thanks for the portion that he got to keep. Remember, after all, that these sacrifices actually belong to God. The Levite could say, "Lord, what's yours is yours, but thanks to you, some of what's yours is mine." Leviticus chapter 7 reminds us that God knows how to look after his servants, particularly when they're serving him. For years, I had read stories of George Mueller of Bristol, J. Hudson Taylor, and other missionaries who had looked to God moment by moment in faith for him to provide all their needs. But it wasn't until I got out on the mission field myself that I began to live those stories, not just read about them. I can remember where the exact amount of money that I needed to pay my taxes came into a mission offering in 3 checks, one written out to the church and 2 individually written to me. And to the dollar amount, it exactly equaled what I needed for my taxes that year. We worship a supernatural God, and he is able to meet your needs. In fact, Paul told the Corinthians that God was more than able to meet all of their needs in Christ Jesus, particularly as they stepped out and helped meet the needs of his servants. Maybe today God's speaking to your heart about your role in helping support gospel work or to fling missionaries to the four corners of the globe. Famous English missionary during the 1800s, C.T. Studd, once wrote, "I'll go down the deepest, darkest hole if you'll hold the rope." God knows how to provide for his missionaries, but he wants to use you. Read Leviticus chapter 7 today and ask yourself this question: have I got a firm grip on my end of the rope?
Join us next time on Through the Word as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.